The door frame of the Israelite home becomes a demarcation point, marking how the sacred home within was a realm of love and life, even when death and destruction stalked outside, and thereby emphasized that the sanctity of the Jewish home was a source of Israelite endurance, transmission, and ultimately immortality. Welcome to 10-Minute Mitzvah, Episode 11, The Mezuzot of Egypt and Gerona. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Before we speak of the mitzvah known in the general parlance today as that of the mezuzah, let us first examine an earlier commandment of God that concerned the mezuzot, the doorposts of Jewish homes. That, of course, is the commandment to spread the blood of the paschal offering in Egypt prior to the plague of the firstborn on the two sides and the top of every Israelite door in the entryway of every Israelite home. In the film, The Ten Commandments, the application of this blood is treated as a way of warding off the plague, whether or not the Israelite dwelling in that home wishes to engage in this ritual or not. Thus, if you have seen the film, you will know that the character Dathan, played by the late great Edward G. Robinson, refuses to apply any blood to his home, but at nightfall, Joshua places the blood anyway in order to save the woman Lilia, a made-up character that is in Dathan's home. Then, in a dramatic moment, Dathan is shocked to discover that there was blood on his doorposts, and he exclaims in the morning to the Egyptian soldiers, "I placed no blood on my house." And the Egyptian replies, "Then stone bleeds," and forces him to leave with the rest of the people Israel. As he departs, Dathan inquires, "Where are we going?" And the Egyptian responds, "To hell, I hope." The idea seems to be, as DeMille understood it, that the blood was there to signify to God which homes are to be struck and which should be saved. But with all due respect to Cecil B. DeMille and to the film that, as you know, I love, the truth is that the rabbis understand this ritual in the exact opposite way. As the Mishnaic sage Rabbi Ishmael argues, God, of course, has no difficulty distinguishing between the domiciles of Egyptians and Israelites and needs no blood on a doorpost in order to distinguish between homes. Rather, the rabbi insists the verse explicitly stresses that the source of salvation will be the way in which the blood on the doorposts, in which the sanctification of the doorposts, inspires the people of Israel that live in those homes. The verse that is cited in Exodus is, "V'haya hadam lachem la'ot," and the blood shall be for you as a sign. And the rabbis add, "V'lo l'Hashem la'ot, v'lo l'acherem la'ot." It is a sign for you, not for God, and not for others, for you alone. In other words, this blood on the door, God says, will be for you a sign, and in the merit of you understanding the sign, I will shield your door and block the plague from entering. Understanding the meaning of the sanctified door, the holy entryway, that is the source of salvation. And it is with this in mind that we may ponder the obligation of the mezuzah, which is a colloquial term, as the word mezuzah refers to the actual doorposts. The obligation is to ensure that a sacred scroll, a scroll made holy by the writing of two biblical passages, each of which contain the obligation of the placing of this scroll, on the doorposts. Today, the scroll is placed in a case and affixed to the door. Often in the past, it might have been placed in a special slot made for it inside the doorpost itself. This is a way of sanctifying the entryways throughout Jewish homes. But why? In explaining this, we may turn back to the original paschal obligation concerning doorposts. If you visit the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or the British Museum, or any other museum with a fine Egyptology wing, you will see what can be known as a false door. These are doorposts that decorated and adorned the tombs of Old Kingdom Egyptian kings and officials, the likes of which can be found in the pyramids themselves. These doors are blocked and lead nowhere. They are merely part of the wall. They are not actually built as an entryway into the tomb, but rather as a portal into the realm of the afterlife. This is called a false door. As the Met website tells us, quote, "Egyptians believed that the soul of the deceased could freely enter and exit the tomb through a false door, which was characterized by a recessed surface with a symbolic entrance," end quote. In other words, in ancient Egyptian belief, following the embalming and burial of the body, the aspect of the soul known as the ka needed to be sustained physically from food brought in from the world of the living, and thus the door was built as a site of sacrifice and offerings that would be laid there by the family of the deceased. As the excellent travel website Atlas Obscura informs us, quote, "The false doors were often the focal point of a tomb's offering chamber because they allowed both real and magical offerings to reach the soul, or ka, of the tomb occupant. In the same way, the false doors provided a passageway for the ka of the deceased to leave the afterlife and visit their tomb. End quote. Thus, the doorframe for the Egyptians ensured the actual physical immortality of the deceased. In Egyptian belief, the soul kept coming back to this world in order to receive physical sustenance. The false door was the source of immortality, and that is why Egyptians of high rank spend so much time during their lives designing their graves. Then, in the New Kingdom, with pharaohs interred in the Valley of the Kings, in secret tombs, separate temples were set up with false doors at which sacrifices could be performed to sustain the pharaoh's soul and to allow it to connect with this world. Again, the door remained. The doorframe was believed to be a portal to the world of the dead. We can thus understand the significance of what the original Paschal offering might have meant to the Israelites that lived in Egypt. When Moses gave them this obligation, they understood that what was taking place was a ritual reversal of all that Egypt practiced. Whereas for the Egyptians, the doorframe in the context of sacrificial ritual embodied a portal between the world of the dead inside and the world of the living outside. The ritual of the Paschal Lamb embodied an inversion, so that the doorframe embodied a division, a force field, a source of spiritual protection between Israelite life inside the home and the forces of death that stalked outside. The doorframe of the Israelite home becomes a demarcation point, marking how the sacred home within was a realm of love and life even when death and destruction stalked outside, and thereby emphasized that the sanctity of the Jewish home and of the Jewish family was a source of Israelite endurance, transmission, and ultimately immortality. We could thus understand the fittingness of the fact that as Israel approached the Holy Land, Moses communicated a commandment of God in Deuteronomy, instructing them first in chapter 6, verse 9, Uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha uvisharecha. You shall write these words, the words of the Shema, on the doors of your home and on your gates. The Israelites would have remembered the way in which the homes of their people were sanctified in Egypt, marking these domiciles as sources of life and endurance. And they understood that in being obligated to sanctify their own homes with the placing of a sacred scroll, they are called to form their families as sources of Jewish life in the generations to come. One of the inspiring experiences that occurred during travel came about during my visit to Girona, the land where Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, Nachmanides, once served as the rabbi. The Jewish quarter sits today to a great extent as it was, and as I visited there and walked, I felt in a primal way how Nachmanides was there with me, and this allowed me just a little bit to think about his own experiences. In 1262, a Jewish convert by the name of Pablo Cristiani forced Nachmanides to debate the truth of Judaism in the presence of the King of Aragon in Barcelona, which Nachmanides ably did. But upon returning to Girona, he was forced by the leading clergyman to write up and defend what he had done, which led to him being driven out of Girona, and he made his way to the Holy Land. The departure of the Jews of Girona came some years after. As you walk the streets in Girona, hauntingly you see on several houses holes on the doorposts. These were carved out centuries ago for the placing of parchment of mezuzot. And as the Jews left, either in 1492 or earlier after the pogroms of Girona, never to return, they took their scrolls, they took their mezuzot with them. It is eerie, but it is also inspiring because it embodies the faith of these Jews, the love and the light that filled these homes, and therefore a sign of the endurance of the Jewish people, which can be found today. The Hebrew word for generation is dor, and the obligation to transmit the Torah applies midor lidor, from generation to generation. And we understand that it is no mere pun to say that this took place from door to door, from home to home, from entryway to entryway, and that the mezuzah, like its predecessor, the blood that served as a sign of life, reminds us of one of the reasons why today, Am Yisrael Chai. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.